How our values direct our lives. That's our topic of our seminar today. How our values direct our lives. All of you know, if not, I'll tell you. I am Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. And since 1975, we've been in Campo, California with our Correspondence University training students all over the world in how to be all that they are. Now, here for the Divine Circle of Illuminati, we are having how our values direct our lives. We have to begin with, I'll read the four items, you've read them on the program. My greatest value is to be myself and have fun. What I consider my greatest value, I see in the world. I demonstrate what I consider my values in how I look at life. I am easy, and so is my life and my world. Is that okay, Lucille? Is that okay?
That's okay.
That's okay. To begin with, I would like us all to consider a very, very important point. In German, we say, Ich bin Nummer eins. In English, we say, I am number one. I am number one. I am number one. Will every Reverend Dr. Ellen Jeremini stand up, please? Every Reverend Dr. Ellen Jeremini stand up, please? Every one of you who are Reverend Dr. Ellen Jeremini, will you stand? Just you?
That's just me.
You represent that name?
That's right.
Thank you. Sit down.
Thank you.
No. If ever you are introduced, you stand up. Because you're number one. And we have name tags put on all of you. And these name tags indicate something. Now, what is it? Maria Guest?
Yes,
and what does the guest mean?
We are guest here.
Hmm?
She's a guest.
Oh, you are a guest of someone else.
Yes.
Oh boy, did you handle that well. That's beautiful. That's beautiful, but she's not really a guest. She is going to be here under her own name. She is not going to be here as a guest. You are not a guest of anybody else in this world. You are only yourself. Now, a lot of cultures go around expressing themselves as superior to others. Sometimes the white culture is expressed as superior to others. And sometimes you meet young people, they go around strutting away, you know, as though they're superior to some other people. Now, what is this all about? This is merely an expression of I am number one. Now, if you said to someone, are you Jesus the Christ? And that person answered you, yes, I am Jesus the Christ. And then you would say to them, wow, wow, wow. And he'd say, what do you mean, wow? He says, I'm just being myself and having fun. I'm just doing what comes natural to me. Now, if I say, Lucille, what is your name? And she says, Lucille. And I say, wow, wow, wow. And what does that mean? What that means is she just is being herself and having fun. Every one of us want to be ourselves and have fun. I was in Nigeria, and I was surrounded by black people. Black people, can you imagine that? And all of these people were doing their thing. And all of these people looked at me as another black person. Because I did not think of myself any different from them in any way, shape, or form, except perhaps in my attitude of who I am. Some of them said, I am me, you know, I am Mr. Wonderful. And they love to go around calling themselves princess and queen and, you know, all these lovely titles. And that's good. That's good. Millicent? How do you act like God? Just being yourself, right? How do you act like God? Just being yourself. How do you act like Mr. Wonderful? Just being yourself. When are we not acting like we are? When we're not acting like we are. If we are not acting like I am Herb Byerly, I am Reverend Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, no big deal. I am that fantastic person. Now, I'm not that fantastic person. When I walk around, people look at me and say, that's a nice guy. I enjoy talking to him. He's a very sincere person. He's a very loving person. These are things that make me up. These are things that are what I am. Now, I asked her to marry me a few minutes ago, and she didn't say yes. You know, but, Erwin, am I Mr. Wealthy Guy?
Yes, you are.
Now, why would she say, yes, you are a wealthy man? Why would she say that?
Because I am wealthy.
Because I am her reflection. She is a wealthy lady, and she can only see me as a wealthy person. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all the doctors would go into the hospital and see all their patients whole and perfect? Wow! Wouldn't that be fabulous? Just imagine every doctor going into the hospital to see his patients and say, well, how are you today? You're whole and perfect. Fantastic. Well, go home. What are you doing here? This is what each of us has the opportunity to do. What role are you playing? Are you a mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, cousin? You know? Are you a man? Are you a woman? Are you a child? Are you an adult? What role are you playing? Do you know who you are? Do you know that you are number one? Do you know that you're the most fantastic being on the face of the earth? And if you know it, you show it, but you don't show it with your nose up in the air. You show it with self-confidence, with a belief in yourself that you are number one, with a recognition that you are good and very good. This is what it's all about. This is what life is all about. Do you understand that? This is what life is all about. Now, I came here today to talk to some people who needed to be reminded that they're number one. And what is it that I find here today? What is it that I find in this audience? Even Christopher is sitting on a cushioned seat. I mean, he's in the back of the room, sitting on a cushioned seat. And what kind of seats are all of you sitting on?
Cushioned.
You know, how about that? Now, how does that work out? How does that work out? You came early. You came with enthusiasm. You came with a readiness to be part of the program. You came with a joy in your heart. You came with a recognition that you wanted to be part of whatever this is. Can you say to yourself, I am number one? Can you say to yourself, I am number one?
I am number one.
Very good. You said it without any question. Now, when you can always say, I am number one, without any question, do you know what's going to happen? That's all that you're going to know in your life. Okay, Oliver. This is Dr. Oliver, MD, and he walks into his hospital and he says, well, my friends, how are you today? To all of the patients in the hospital. And the patients in the hospital say to Oliver, Dr. Oliver, excuse me, you see how important the word Dr. Oliver is? They say, Dr. Oliver, MD, I'm fantastic. I feel wonderful. And Dr. Oliver, MD, says, okay, we'll sign you out. And then, do you know what Dr. Oliver, MD, says, who is Mr. Wealth? He says, no charge. Ha! Wouldn't that be a lovely experience? No charge. Well, how do you keep things together, doctor, if you give away your services? And he said, I speak my word. You are not my source. You patients are not my source of money. My source is the divine. My source is my mind, my thought. My thought that says I am independently wealthy. My thought that says I am Dr. Oliver M.D. and I operate in this manner. Dr. Oliver M.D., what do you say to your patients?
Go home.
Very good. Go home. Because you're whole and perfect. Now, you think that's a joke. You think that's really a joke, but it's not. I have a very dear friend, Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Seke, M.D. And Dr. Seke was raised in Europe and in the Sorbonne. He went to the medical school, and he's very competent, very fine man. And he went on a mission. He was M.D., and he was sent to an island in the Pacific, a leper colony, where only lepers were. And he was sent there as not a replacement, but just a substitute to fill in so that the doctors who were there would have some time off. And so he went to this island. And when he got to the island, all the nurses and all the doctors packed up and took off on vacation. And he replaced them. One doctor, he was a young man, he was able to handle it, but he went to this island, and here he was in charge of everything. And so he looked at these lepers, and he said, how are you guys doing? And the leper said, okay, you know, considering what we're facing, it's okay. And he said, well, there's no reason for you to be a leper. There's no reason. I believe in health. I believe in eating the right foods. I believe in right mental attitude. I believe in that, he said to them. And they said, yes, doctor. We have had many doctors through here who gave us their attitude of how we should be whole and perfect and how we could be whole and perfect and how we could do these things. And I'm ready to listen to you. I will do whatever you say. And so the doctor says, all right, all I have to work with are you patients, because the staff has gone off on vacation. You say, that's impossible. It sounds that way, but it happened. So then, he said to the patients, gather all of the canned foods that are here on the island and bring them to the pier. So they gathered all of the canned foods on the island, and that was all they were basically eating, was canned foods. And they took them to the pier. And then all the bottled foods, everything that was not natural. And he had them put them on the pier and then threw them into the ocean. All of them. Threw them all into the ocean. I mean, that's what the people were eating. Now the people were going to have to starve. And so he said, okay, now we're going to take the natural foods of the island and we're going to serve them to you. We're going to serve the coconuts to you. We're going to serve the pineapples to you. We're going to serve the papaya to you. We're going to serve all these natural foods that are on this South Pacific island for you as your total substance. And they had a spring there that the water came from, and you drink only water. No tea, no nothing else, just water. And the people naturally felt quite a change, and you can imagine going to fruit only. Did they have clean systems? My goodness sakes, they were like, you know, washed clean. They had those colonics that the doctors give them, and they had all those other things, my goodness, and they were clean as a whistle. That's 1 week. The second week passed, and the people began to drop all their cankerous sores and all of their ugliness that the being a leper brought to them, and it fell away. And they began swimming, and they began doing all sorts of things. And within a two-week period, miracles took place with every single leper on that island. I'm not saying they were completely cured in 2 weeks, but they were well on the road. Well, the doctors remained gone for a month. And during that month, these prisoners, lepers, they were prisoners to their leprosy. These prisoners to their leprosy were no longer prisoners to it. The disease was gone from their body, and they were ready to leave that island and rejoin humanity. Now, Dr. Sakay was not merely a medical doctor. He was a philosopher. And he taught the philosophy of being yourself and having fun, of respecting yourself and knowing yourself and loving yourself. He taught many wonderful things. And the lepers went home. The doctors came back and the lepers went home. And the doctors, of course, left too. But this is a true story. This is a most unusual story. And you say, well, why is it that they don't do it everywhere? Well, you see, pardon me, you're Dr. Oliver, we'll call you Dr. Sakay. They don't have a Dr. Sakay there. Edmund Bordeaux Sakay. They don't have a Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Sakay. What did Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Sakay do? Anyone can tell me? He...
Huh? He was himself and had fun.
He was himself and had fun. He believed in himself. He didn't doubt when he told them, throw all that food in the ocean. Don't starve. No, don't worry. I got some tricks up my sleeve, you know. I got long sleeves. And so I got some tricks up my sleeve. But throw that food in the ocean. He said that with confidence. Now, do you think he's ever done that before? No. No, he's never done that before. He's never been on a leper colony before. He's never worked. He probably never even saw a leper before, only in the textbook, in his medical textbook. But from within him, because he liked himself, because he believed in himself, because he was number one, he had only himself to depend on. Oh, God, help me. Oh, God, yes. God in him, help him. And God in him directed him to do that. So with that, he felt a great confidence. And with that great confidence, he went to the people and he said, okay, all of you, help me. We're all being eaten away by this leprosy. He says, I don't care, come on, help me. And drag it over here and get all that stuff out of here. And he did it. And he did it. He helped them. Threw it in the ocean. He believed in himself. And they felt his belief. Now, here we have Jesus sitting here. Okay? We got Jesus sitting here. And they bring Jesus, the crippled, the lame, the ill. And they say, Jesus, heal them. And he says, what the hell is wrong with you guys? What is the matter? Jesus said, what the hell? Yeah. What is wrong with you guys? What is wrong with you guys? I am the Christ. I can only see everything whole and perfect. I can only see everything beautiful. That's my reality. I am the Christ. And you bring people to me, and I can only look at them and say, they're fine for me. You know, they may have all sorts of problems, but as far as you're concerned, you only see their wholeness and perfection, and you demonstrate that with them by them having confidence in you, having confidence in yourself. You cannot doubt for 1 minute. You cannot see for 1 minute whatever it was that brought them to you. You can only see what you, as the divine, as you, as Messiah, you as the Master, you as the Christ. Every one of you is the Christ. Every one of you is divine. Every one of you is created that way. And this is an admonition that's been given to you by the words of Jesus. Now, I'm not trying to be preachy or teachy and think it's in that area. It's just the way it is. Dr. Sankey did what? He believed, didn't he? And his belief was carried through with all the people. And they all went home whole and perfect. They all went home healed. Because, in truth, they never were sick. They never did have leprosy. What is leprosy? Leprosy is a figment of the imagination. Every disease, every illness of the body. How were you created? Were you created sick? Were you created imperfect? Were you created with problems? No. You were created as a divine idea, whole and perfect. 100% whole and perfect. That's the way we were created. We are created as a divine idea, whole and perfect. We're not created to get well. We're not created to grow up. We're not created to do anything. And what did the master teacher say to us? He says, you're growing up too fast. You must become as little children to enter into the kingdom of heaven. So we must return to the awareness of ourselves as innocent children to enter into the kingdom, to be whole and perfect, to live in the wholeness and the perfection that we are. That's the only way we can do it. Now, how do we become little children? Well, you have Dr. Oliver here, MD, or you have Dr. Sankey, MD, saying to you, throw it in the ocean. But, throw it in the ocean. Just believe. Right? We have the Christ over here, and what happens? People are brought to him, and he says to them, I don't see anything wrong with you. You know? I don't see anything that needs healing. Jesus Christ, what's so wrong with you? Don't you realize that I got a broken leg? Oh, you want another broken leg? I didn't know that that was something that you wanted. You know? You say, my goodness sakes, what foolishness that is. Yes, what foolishness that is. And that's the foolishness that humanity plays with itself. Humanity plays foolishness with itself of pretending that it is not something that it is. Humanity is divinity. And we want to always give ourselves an out. I'm only human. We make excuses for not being divine, for not being our original purity and integrity. Okay. We have any wiseacres here who want to say to me, but, and I'll say to you, you take any stem cell, which is the originating cell of all life, which is everywhere in our body and everybody's body, you take one stem cell and you let that stem cell grow and be under its ideal situation in a petri dish, for instance, where it's nourished and cared for and it's loved. That cell will never die. It has no reason to die. It doesn't have the input of your autonomic nervous system, the other things of your body that say, I'm getting old, I'm having problems, I'm doing these things or that. You see, that isn't there. The stem cell is before your thought about it. The stem cell is an ideal concept out of the infinite thinking system, out of the infinite mind, out of the infinite creative cause. And that is the foundation upon which you and I have our physical bodies formed. And we go back to our original purity and integrity, back to our original stem cell, back to our original cell that is put into being. What's a statement that science likes to make? And it seems to back itself up quite often. Matter, Christopher, do you know it? Matter can neither be
Sculpted.
Created nor destroyed. Matter is. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. Now, here's another goodie for you. Where did we start from? Where is the beginning of time? Where is the end of time? Where is the middle of time?
It's infinity.
Infinite. There is no beginning. There is no end. It's eternal. Time is eternal. How can time be eternal if time is made up of whatever makes up time? And science tries to tell us that there is no time and there is no space. It's all right here at one. Return to our original purity and integrity. Be our original purity and integrity. What a wonderful possibility. Now, we take people who are lepers. Their legs are eaten off and their bodies are missing limbs and what have you, and flesh, and the leprosy has been quite negative. And what happens to these people? Do they remain an empty shell with just no arms and legs and stuff like that? Or do those arms and legs grow back? Or do those arms and legs reappear because they, in fact, were always there? Now, I worked with the Menninger Foundation, and I worked with the University of California in San Diego and Los Angeles and many other organizations, and the things that we worked on were using, for instance, Carillion photography. Carillion photography is where you take a photograph of your hand, and it photographs your energy body. It photographs the energy of your body. And it will show the great vibratory fields that are around your fingertips and around your hand. Now, they had a photograph of a hand with a missing finger, a live hand with a missing finger. And the photograph showed the energy body of that missing finger still present. That energy body of the missing finger was still present. They have photographed leaves, and they cut off a chunk of leaf, and the energy body of that cut off piece of leaf is still there. Its original purity and integrity is always there and always will be there, and is there for it to re-express itself, to reveal itself, to return to its original purity and integrity. It's quite exciting. It's quite wonderful. And you know, that's where you are. You are at the point right now of revealing your original purity and your original integrity. Now, I have white hair, and I have a body that has a number of years with it. And for a number of years, I have allowed my body to say to itself, you had a year and you had a gray hair, so to speak. Well, now, that's silly, isn't it? That's silly. I would like to revert that and say, every year I add more to my original purity and integrity. I add to the fact that I like me, and I am divine, and I'm wonderful. Now, every time I go in for a physical checkup in the doctor's office, he looks at me and says, oh, my gosh, you're perfect, you know. Now, isn't that something? Isn't that something? Well, then, Herb, why do you take vitamins? Why do you take these other things? Because I do, you know. Is that bad? Is that good? No. Do I need it? Not really. What would happen if I didn't have it? What would happen when Dr. Seke comes along and says, dump all that canned food in the ocean? Ah, what are we going to eat? We're so used to having tuna, and we're so used to having all the canned fish and canned meats and what have you that's in cans. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Dr. Seke says, you leave that to me. I know. Been there, done that. Mentally. They think he's been there, done that in fact, but mentally. And so they believe him. And they believe him. What are the followers of a church? They believe in the philosophy of the church. What are the followers of a philosopher? They believe in the philosopher. Why in the do you go to your doctor? And I was going to swear, why do you in the hell go to your doctor? No. Why do you go to the doctor? And then your doctor says, okay, now I want you to take this pill, this pill, this pill, because these are things that you have evident in your body. Now, you take these pills, and you have to take them at certain times, and you have to take them with food or without food, and so forth, like that. And you, yes, doctor, yes, doctor. And then along comes another person, and they say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't believe that I should do that. And they don't take it. Now, the person who takes it lives, and the person who doesn't take it lives. Now, how can that be? How can that be? I don't recommend you not following your doctor's advice. Understand that. If that is where your belief is, if you believe in Dr. Seke, you know, if you believe in Dr. Oliver, if you believe in that, follow it. But if you believe that you are whole and perfect right now, if you believe that your body is a temple of the living spirit and every organ, action, function of your body is whole and perfect right now, if you believe that you are God, if you believe you're perfect, if you believe you're wonderful, then be it! But you can't be it if you're going to hang on to the past. Now, Lorene asked me to go into her meditation room today, and I went into her meditation room, and I said, Lorene, your meditation room is the past. Your meditation room is surrounded by all sorts of things that make you digress from what you really want to do. You look at all these lovely statues, you look at all these lovely images, they represent something to you, but boing, 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 immediately you're drawn back to them. Tell me, anyone, if you can, what does this represent? This represents a wedding, right? Wedding. It represents a wedding. All right? What does this represent here, this thing this guy's got on his body? It's a shirt. It's a shirt. It covers his chest. What's this on top of our head? Hair. Covers our head. What is this that we are? We have titles, names. We live by it. We go by it. I tell the campus crew, I say, let's live in the now. Let's live in the now. Can you, and I don't say you have to do it, can you take all the pictures of your family, all the pictures of your babies, and all the pictures of everything, and dispose of them absolutely? Not just put them in another cupboard, but dispose of them absolutely. And then, can you start seeing your baby daughter, who is 60 years old, you know, excuse me, 30 years old. Can you start seeing your baby daughter, who is 30 years old, as dynamic, beautiful, alive, as perfect right now? Can you see her whole and perfect, so that she's ageless? Can you see her as the most dynamic, lovely being in your world, now a reflection of you? Can you see that? You cannot see that if you're going to keep a picture of her in the past, in your mind, or in your world. You see what I mean? As long as you keep in your mind and your world your past experiences. I have been a Unity minister and I respect it very much. My mother was a Unity minister, and we were very active in the Unity Church all my youth, you know. And then I went on to the Church of Religious Science and United Church of Religious Science in Los Angeles, and I thought, wow, that's so great. I dumped everything and went there, and I became the editor of the magazine there, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. And then one day, I was a very vocal person, and they liked to have me talk because I talked about a lot of things. And I went a lot of places. I went to Russia and everything, and I came back with all sorts of great stories. And so I tried to get to work, and I couldn't get to work from my home in Corona del Mar up to Los Angeles, some 90 miles away, because my car would, you know, the car just didn't want to run. And I said to the car, I said, hey, you got to run. I'm talking this morning before the entire church group there of the organization, the business organization, and I got to be there. And the car, I said, come on now, I want to be there on time, you know. And so then it went, you know, and I got there. And I got to the church, and I took my car next to my office. There's a filling station. I put it in there. I said, check it over. And then I went in, gave my talk, and it was a good talk. And I came out, and I said to the garage man, what's the matter? And the garage man said, well, something happened to your harness in your engine, your electrical harness, and it shorted out. And your engine should have blown up, but it didn't. I said, well, can you replace it? Oh, yeah. You're lucky. And so the next day, I was giving a talk also to these 500 people who were the staff of the United Church of Religious Science. So I went in there, and I said to them, do you know what happened? On the way to work yesterday, my car started acting up, and I said, come on now, I've got to get to the office, and I've got to give the talk, and I've got to do it. Come on now. You know, all is in divine order. God was in me, I knew that, you know. And I knew what source I was working from. And I said, and you know what happened? It went, you know, like that, and it took me all the way to work. And the harness was burnt, da-da-da-da. And so I got called on the carpet. I got called on the carpet by the president and by the executive officers of the organization. They said, God doesn't heal physical things like that. Doesn't heal cars like that. It just doesn't work that way. Well, it did for me. And then I realized, if that is what they teach, if that is what they're going to say, I cannot be there. I cannot be there. As much as I respect and love Dr. Ernest Holmes and the wonderful things he's written and the magic, perhaps he would never have said that. But the organization said that to me, and so I could not belong there anymore. So little by little, I phased out and started my own organization. But do you understand? You cannot be someplace where they teach something different than what you believe in your heart. You cannot do something where they are. I could not have the distraction in my world of thinking that I could not say that God is everything in wholeness and perfection. I could not believe that. I could not live that way. And so I had to leave. And I left. And I took an appointment and went up to Minneapolis and worked up in Minneapolis in a little church that they had up there. They were paying me some $100,000 a year to be the minister of the church. Not a bad deal, huh? And so, and they gave me my Mercedes 450 SL, and they gave me this 7-story mansion to live in, and they gave me all those things, and they gave me everything because they wanted what I was teaching and what I was doing because they saw the magic. But they too couldn't handle it. They too were like Judas. And Judas loved Jesus with all his heart and soul and being. And Judas was like a little boy who says, my daddy can lick anybody. My daddy can beat anybody. And Jesus didn't play that role. He was not to be the king of the Jews. He was not to be the king of all of that aspect. And he let Judas play his game, which was trying to push him into being the king of the Jews. And Judas wasn't hateful of Jesus, as many people like to think. But little boys are not hateful when they say, my father can lick anybody, and then some big bruiser comes along and gives him a fisticuff that knocks him across the room, you know, because that's not his thing. What about you? What about you? What kind of distractions are you going to allow in your life? What kind of distractions are you going to allow in your life that are going to show you up to be something beautiful? Now, I have a very dear friend. We went to lunch with him today and his wife. And he had been a monk. And he'd been a Catholic priest. And he'd been other things. He'd been in a number of different monasteries. And a very fine man. Very quality tech man. But what he did, he kept running away from his dream instead of standing firm for it. I said to him, why is it that you're running away from your dream? You are such a remarkable man. You are such an ideal fellow. Why are you running away? And he says, I gotta be me. So you see, sometimes when we say, I gotta be me, it's an excuse to do the things that we're doing that may not be our highest and best. He has the genius to do anything. He has the genius to do anything. Christopher, our organist here and our young man here, he has the genius to do anything. He has the genius to be a musician. He has the genius to be an architect. He has the genius to be a mathematician. He has the genius to be a father. He has the genius to have children who are absolutely fantastic. He has the genius to be a most amazing man and living in an ideal physical form that is perfect in every way. He has the genius to do it. But if for 1 minute he allows himself to be distracted and thinks he's missing out on some of the fun because he wants to go out and learn to drive race cars and he wants to go out and do things. You see, his mother and father and he look at him and say, this is an ideal young man. This is an ideal young man who is living his life to its highest and best now and always. This is an ideal young man. They're not saying, well, Christopher, you should do this and you should do that and you should do that. Who knows what he should do? Big deal. Jesus started out as a carpenter, didn't he? How about that? And Jesus started out as a big nose. He went out to the rabbis and he says, hey, you guys, this is my point of view. Look, you 12-year-old kid, what's your point of view, you know? What makes you think your point of view is so good? Then they listened to him and they said, something to think about. You're a very remarkable young man. And this is what they say about Christopher. Do they say this about you and me? Do they say that we are remarkable young men and women? Do they say that we are people who live up to our dream and our vision of ourselves? Does our world say that? Or does our world say, hey, come on, let's have a beer. Come on, let's go and do this or do that. There's nothing wrong with the beer. There's nothing wrong with the wine or there's nothing wrong with the entertainment. I had a young man. He was very sick. And he told me he was very sick. And I said, good. And he said, that's not very nice. And I said, no, well, is that what you want? You want to be sick or you want to be well? Well, I want to be well. Well, then tell me you want to be well. And I will say, good. And I will work with you on being well. Now, What do you do? You work hard on your job. You work a good 8 hours, 10 hours on your job, and you come home, you're exhausted, and you fall into a chair, and you turn on the boob tube. And what do? Count it. Just count it. Turn on the news stations and count how many negative experiences they are reporting in the period of just 10 minutes. Just 10 minutes. And they snipple it into each one of them. Just 10 minutes. And you have maybe 15 or 20 of them. It's very fast. You can say an awfully lot in 30 seconds. And they're putting that in your mind. So then you're sitting in your chair. And you're exhausted, you're laying back and falling asleep in your chair. And you're listening to this stuff. This stuff is pouring into your brain. This stuff is in the outer here. This stuff is in the universe. Now Clive bought himself a beautiful Mercedes. And on his Mercedes he has, what's that radio concept called? The radio you have in there. Excuse me. You bought it. Satellite radio. That's right. It's a satellite radio. And it gets music and talk and so forth from all over the world. Satellite. And it brings it in wherever his car may be. And he listens to all of these news stories, and then he wonders why his life is miserable. No, he doesn't do that. He listens to music that happens to turn him on and make him feel good. He is very selective. He is very selective. Now, are you as selective as when you listen to your television? Don't answer. Are you as selective when you listen to the television? When you hear the television say, and here's the news for today, and you say, all is in divine order, and shut it off. Can you, by one jot or tittle, change anything except by the consciousness of your mind? All is in divine order. Okay, so you hear that you know the news is going on and there's negative things out there. You say, all is in divine order, okay? Is that a good idea, Christopher? All is in divine order. Now, when you say all is in divine order, then what happens? Your mind is shuffling itself through being all in divine order. And anything that's not in divine order is not in your consciousness. Now, here we have Dr. Seike again. So we're working with one of his stem cells, and he's a genius. And his stem cells are all geniuses. So I would say, can I have one of your stem cells?
Yep.
And put one of your stem cells in me. And put one of your little stem cells into my body. And he said, sure, I got millions of them, billions of them. And so I take one of his stem cells and I put it in me. Now, he is a very, very, very good person. A very loving person. A very articulate person. A very beautiful being in all ways of his life. Science today is taking stem cells and in the laboratory putting them into a liver and have the liver completely recondition itself. They're putting stem cells into the heart. And it is completely reconditioning itself. They're putting it into everything because the stem cell is returning it all to the original purity and integrity. Now, I'm playing up the stem cell for one reason, because it's just a technique. Stronger than the stem cells are what? Can any of you tell me? Stronger than the stem cells are your thought. Your thought is stronger than any stem cell. Now, if you allow negative ideas to come in your mind through the television or newspaper or through the radio or through movies or what have you, you're very foolish. Because you're paying to receive some things that are not going to benefit you. That's what you're doing. Now, the early doctors did not have the benefit of what present-day doctors have, which doesn't mean that they're better. But the early doctors would say, okay, take an aspirin, go to bed, and stay there for a couple days, and you'll be perfect. Well, you really didn't need the aspirin, but it made you feel like you got something. And so you went to bed, and you rested, and you relaxed, and you slept, and you thought, the doctor says it's going to work, so it's going to work. And you put it to work. The stem cells go into your body, and every day you have 15,000 or whatever, 10,000 new ones in your brain that are being born, waiting for you to tell them what to do, waiting for you to tell them how to act, how to respond to your life. Now, Loreen is going into her empty chamber. She's going into her empty chamber where she sits and meditates. Now, the room can be filled with clutter, it doesn't matter. She'll keep her eyes closed. But she's going into her empty chamber, and she's saying, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. And as she says that, everything unlike divine order disappears from her world. It disappears from her world. Now,
it comes back into the environment. She comes out into the environment. So what is going to happen?
You say it comes back out into
the... Yes, it comes back from her divine and comes back into the environment where everything is negative again.
So you're saying that thoughts have the ability to recapitulate themselves, to rejuvenate themselves, to come back.
Right.
Well, now, what kind of thoughts are these that are coming back?
Well, they can be negative thoughts.
But who's making them negative? Now, for instance, Loreen is sitting in her meditation room, mm-hmm. and she's closing her eyes to not pay attention to anything around her. And as she does that, then she says, all is in divine order, all is in divine order. And then all that is not in divine order fades out of her thinking. It fades out of her mind, it fades out of her world. And the only attention she gives to it is all is in divine order. And as she does that, then that's all she experiences. But yes, you're right, we have to be so careful because negative thoughts, and they do, negative thoughts are like the newspaper, the magazine, the television, the radio. Negative thoughts are there. Now, I was giving lectures in Switzerland in seminars, and I had a very wonderful seminar coordinator, and he and his girlfriend would take me to the seminars, and they didn't speak English very well. They only spoke Switzerdeutsch. And so they would drive me in their lovely car to the seminar sites, and they would play English music on their radio or on their player. And it was music that had all of the negativity of sexual participation that anyone could ever think about. And I said, oh, Felix, do you know what that is that you're listening to? And he didn't understand me too well. And so I asked my translator to translate that to him. And he said, yeah, it's okay. I don't pay attention to it. I don't pay any attention to it? Really? Really? You empower anything you allow into your consciousness. You empower it. The little boy, we mentioned him the other day, he was playing in the yard with his friend. And his mother came out and said, why are you playing with that friend, with that person? He does naughty things. Mommy, he doesn't do naughty things when he's with me. Well, I don't care. He does naughty things. I don't want you playing with him. I don't want you to be having that rub off on you. But Mom, he doesn't do naughty things when he's with me. When he's with me, he does good things. He does nice things. And the mother had to stop and think that what she really meant was, you always do nice things, And people in your world will always do nice things. His little friend was nice in his world because that's all he accepted from his little friend. He did not allow his little friend to be negative in his world. Now, we too cannot allow ourselves to be into this. I had a church in Nigeria, and it's a wonderful group of people. And this woman has this lovely home, and around the home, many of the people are living in poverty. But her home is quite lavish and beautiful, and many of the people living around her are her relatives, and they're very fine people too. Well, what happens? I walk into the living room, and here they've got the television going. And the television is rattle-tabbling everything, and all the group is assembling for the program that I'm going to put on. And so I said to her, I said, Sybil, I never watch the television. I don't have time to play around with that. I have too many things to do to meditate on things. He said, okay, well, but her son liked to watch it, and her family liked to watch it, and so forth. And I said, in my home, we have televisions, but we don't use them as televisions. We use them only as a video to watch videos that we choose, very carefully chosen videos. And we do not watch just everything that's available. I said, we do not watch television because we don't want in our mind the negativity of the world around us. If someone comes and says to me, Herb, there's a problem over on 2nd Street, I'll say, all is in divine order. Herb, you don't even know what the problem is. I don't need to know, do I? I say, all is in divine order. Isn't that the way the principle works? Am I working with the principle? Why is it that Christopher can play music? Because he's working with the principle. The principle is the notes that are put down, the notes that exist, the notes that have this harmonic vibration, and that's the principle. Now, when Joey goes to his plumbing activities, what happens? He goes in there, and people say to him, Joey, my system doesn't work. And he says, well, let's take a look there. And so he does the Roto-Rooter bit, and he checks it out, and he says, here's what your system is. Here's what your problem is. You have a root from a tree that has grown right down into one of your arteries. One of your arteries. And it's causing your system to not work properly. Plus, it's bringing the garbage back into your system again. Plus. Now, if you will clean out the garbage, if you'll pull the weeds out of your garden, pull these roots out that are right by your plumbing drain problems and your drain situation, it'll cease. Take it out and put a bandage on it, or whatever you do, and it's done. Now, what big metaphysical truth is there to that? What great difficult situation is there to that? Nothing. Nothing at all. We want to make out of our world that it's a great difficulty. We want to make out of our world that we are not illumined. We want to make out of our world that we don't know the answer. And one little boy hit his sister over the head with a pair of roller skates. And his dad brought me to talk to him and have a discussion with him. And so I talked with him. And I said, you know that it hurts when somebody hits you with roller skates, then? No, I didn't know that. Well, where's your roller? Where are your roller skates? Now let me hit you just now. I'm going to hit you. Don't, that'll hurt. See, you knew. You knew. You didn't want to know. You pretended you did. You tried to be mean and never lie. If you meant to hit your sister with roller skates, then just say it. I meant to hit her with my roller skates. And then you'll be properly handled. But stand up for whatever you choose to do and don't lie. Don't ever say anything that you don't know. Because the minute you start that, then your whole life is going to fall into shambles. Your whole life is going to not be anything beneficial for you, and you're not going to be successful. We are so filled with the power and the joy and the magic of who we are. But are we willing to carry it out? Well, Sybille turned off her television set. In fact, she took the television set out of the living room. I don't know where she put it, but she took it out of the living room. Now, I didn't tell her she had to do that. I didn't tell anybody they have to do anything. I just say, we got this root that's going into the artery here. Pull it out. Now that root is a television that's feeding into that artery all that garbage and all that misery. Pull it out. Have nothing to do with it. Be master of your life, of your world, of your condition, you know. I was sitting at home the other day and I was facing the television that was turned on. It's very compelling. Very compelling to watch what's there because it's on. So I moved my chair and I put my back to it. I figured, I'm not going to tell somebody else what to do in their house. I'm just not going to be watching. So I turned around and I didn't see it. And lo and behold, we had conversations that were going on that had nothing to do with the television. Wonderful, huh? We can all be master of ourselves, and we don't have to be uppity or superior to anybody else. We don't have to tell anybody else that we're better than them because we're standing up for who we are. Now think of these things, because these things are all very important. Now, we started off by saying, my greatest value is to be myself and to have fun. Can you believe that you are yourself and have fun? Can you believe that you are yourself and that you're being yourself? Can you believe that? You see, if your life isn't fun, you're not doing it right. If your life is fun, you're doing it just right. You're going to be challenged when you take a new point of view on yourself, because people are used to seeing you just the way you are right now, with all your limited attitudes about yourself. And if you're going to be a new person, then they're going to see new attitudes. Isn't that true? They're going to see new attitudes because you are going to be that new person. You see, we talked about the stem cells, and we put the stem cell in the liver. And what happened to the liver? Completely cleaned it out. Completely changed. Return the liver to its original purity and integrity. The program, the technique, and the way of doing this hasn't been established completely just yet, but they're working on it. Over in China, the doctors are forcing stem cells into different parts of people's bodies who come over there, and they're getting a modicum of success, but nothing really great because of one thing, because it has to happen naturally. If you realize, if you will just realize, every single day of your life, you are born with 10,000 new stem cells in your brain, millions through your body, waiting to go to work. And they can't go to work because they don't know what to do. Now, the same goes for thoughts. We have an infinite number of thoughts going through our mind that tell us how to live and how to be and how to do. Reverend Slater is working with her students in school, and she's teaching them mathematics. She's sharing with them the magic of mathematics. She's sharing with them the magic of how to think and how to take ideas and put them together in terminology that only mathematicians can enjoy. But is she doing that really? No. That's part of it. But what she's saying to them is, within you is the ability to understand this. Within you is the genius to know exactly what to do. within you. And her students say to her, wow, you're a great teacher. Now answer me in all honesty. Out of 30 teachers, how many teachers do the children say of them that they are great teachers? Most of them are a pain in the neck. Most of them are ogres, they're tyrants, they're terrible people because they try to command the students to do it. They try to demand the students to do it. And if you just work with them and tell them that they are wonderful, they are beautiful, they are good, they are fantastic, being yourself and having fun, if you just say that to them, do you know what happens? They begin to act that way. And Reverend Slade's way of talking with them, her way of dealing with her students is that way. That's what she does when she talks to you. She stands before you to share this philosophy and the philosophy that she understands. She shares it with you from her heart. And out of the very depth of her soul comes the answer to your question and your question and your question of just what it is that it's important for you to know. And she tells you. But now we want to touch the concept. How do we make ourselves receptive to the divine? How do you make yourself receptive to the divine? This is a technique that works very beautifully, very powerfully, very wonderfully, and if you will apply it sincerely, once or twice a day, you will have magic taking place in your life the first day. This is the technique. It's called the energy massage. Your body is filled with energy. As we said, the Carillion photography showed all the energy around the fingertips and how it works. And many people have tremendous energy. And when a doctor comes into the patient and puts his hand on their forehead, he's not feeling their temperature. He's sharing his energy with them, saying, it's okay now. It's okay. You're whole and perfect. And when the nurse comes in and takes their hand, the nurse says, there, there, there. All is in divine order. You're perfect. You're good. The nurse isn't healing them. The nurse is causing them to be aware and awake to the energy within their own being and the energy that's within their own body and in their own self. Now, the energy massage awakens this energy within you. Here's how you use it. You lie on your bed. You can be naked or you can be clothed, it doesn't matter, but you lie on your bed and you take your fingers and gently move it over just the exterior of your body. You're not trying to touch your body. If you touch it, it's okay, but you're not trying to touch. Just a hair's width above the body. And you move it over your entire body, and you go over your head, and you go over your shoulders, and you go over your body all the way. And you go over your whole body several times. But the magic potion is this. As you do this, you say, I like me, 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 I like me. As you do that, your whole body tingles with excitement. It tingles with awareness, with alertness, with awakeness, with wholeness. Your whole body comes alive. We are energy. If I were to take Dr. Zeke here, or Dr. Oliver here, or whoever we've got here, and I were to crunch him up into a tight ball, I could do that. Crunch him into a tight ball. Now, what would happen to 99% of them? It'd evaporate as water. But the rest of them is just atoms, you know. And just in a tight little ball. Tight little ball. And then in a tighter little ball. And what would be going on within that little ball? Energy. How many of you have seen the picture of an atom, you know? They draw it as a circle, and it has the inner and the outer and that sort of stuff. And what's going on within that atom? Come on, loudly. What's going on within the atom, Christopher? Neutron, electron, proton. Thank you very much. And what's bouncing around? Is it the neutron, electron, or proton? Ellen, what is it? Neutron, electron, or proton?
Electron.
Yes, all of it. The electron basically is on the outside. The proton is what's bouncing around inside, and the neutron is what contains it. Okay? But the electron, that's the activity, that's the energy that's there doing wonderful things. Now, that's always busy in us. These electrons are always busy in us, always doing all of these things that are making us just dynamic and forceful and active. And it's wonderful. Yeah, come right up here in front and sit. And it's making us active and forceful. Now, when you take your fingertips and move it over your body, you are enacting the energy of your body. The energy of your body is getting ready to do beautiful things. The energy of your body is ready to go to work for you. Now, if you say, "Oh, I feel terrible," you know, you're sort of slumped down, that is taking that energy and using it in an incorrect way for you. Now, how do you want to use that energy in the most beneficial way for you? How do you want to do that? You want to just tell that energy, "I like me." I like me. It's just as simple as that, saying, "I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me." The child does something naughty. And so you, the mother or the teacher, you say right on the board now, "I will not be bad, I 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 will not be bad." And the kid is just going to be worse and worse and worse. If the kid will write on the board or on a paper, "I am a good boy. I am a good boy. I like my mother. I like my father. I like my world. I am a good boy. I always do things happily and harmoniously. I am a good boy. I am a good boy." You see? You're going to change the whole modus operandi of what's going on. The entire program that is being executed is going to be a program of power and joy and goodness and beingness. It's up to you. It's up to you. You can do this. Now, during some of our master seminars, I have people do this energy massage. And they go to their rooms and they run their hands over their body, up and down. They roll over and they think it where they can't touch it. And they say, "I like me, I 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 like me." And as they say, "I like me," what happens? They feel 100% better than they ever felt in their life. They feel that life is really wonderful. They feel that magic is taking place in their world. And because they feel that magic is taking place in front of their world, what's happening? Magic is taking place in their world. Are you ready for such magic in your world? If you are, that means it's a good idea for you to get busy and to take charge of putting some good thoughts in motion about yourself, of determining just what it is that is really important for you. What is important for you? Is it important for you to like yourself? Is it important for you to live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body? Do you live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body?
I should hope so.
We live in our ideal spirit-minded body every time we say, I live in my ideal spirit-minded body. We put that cause in motion. Now, Clive, when you get into your car, do you say, yeah, just an old rattle trap, I'll drive it with no caution, and I'll just zip here and there, and I'll carelessly run it over the grass and up over the curb and stuff like that, because I don't really care. Would you do that to your car? No way. No way. And you know why he wouldn't do that? It's not because his car is so expensive. It's because he loves his car. He loves his car, so therefore he is not going to drive his car in a careless way. Now, if the manufacturer's specification says he must use top fuel, he'll use top fuel. If the manufacturer's specifications say every so many miles you take it in for a checkup, he's going to take it in for a checkup even though it doesn't need it, because it's such a high quality, fine car. How long is that car going to last him? 30 years from now, somebody's going to look at that car and say, classic, you know, beautiful, fantastic. Just like the day it was born. It has built-in lubrication system, it has built-in this, it has built-in that. Everything is as ideal 30 years from the day it was born to the day that you checked it. Now, why? Because he is getting in his car and he's saying, oh, nice car, nice car. You know, nice car, you know. And he pets that car and he looks at the car and he says, oh, that's my favorite. That's my favorite. Reverend Slater, do you do that with your car? Yes.
I am thankful, yes, every time I enter divine order.
Ah, see, she's got a thing that she does. She has a pattern. Everything is in divine order in her car. Is your car always in divine order? Is it always running perfectly? Is it always a joy to drive?
Yes.
Does your husband like to drive it every moment he can?
He's free to.
Oh, he's free to, but I didn't say that. Does he like to every time he can? Does he like to?
Yes.
Yes. Now, would he like to drive it all the time? And your answer is yes. And then what would happen if he drove it all the time, my love? You would buy yourself another one, perhaps even more magnificent than that. You'd say, go ahead, Daddy, it's yours, you know? But this is what comes, right? This is what comes. And then you give yours to the boy here. This is what comes when you love anything. When you love your children, when you love your job, when you love your world, when you love your body, then your body says, hey, I didn't know you liked me. You go around feeding me all sorts of crap, you know. Yeah. You give me, I'm a vegetarian and you give me meat. And if you're not a vegetarian and you eat meat, that's fine. Yeah, you're putting alcohol in me, and I'm not a car. I don't need to have alcohol. It's not cold weather down here. I don't need alcohol in my engine to keep my engine okay. But it's just wine, and it's good wine. There's nothing wrong with wine. There's nothing wrong with alcohol. There's nothing wrong with any of these things, unless you think so. Do you think so? And if you think so, even a little bit, then don't get yourself caught with it. I'm not telling you don't do it. Please don't say it. I don't say sex is bad. All I'm doing is saying it has its place and its time, and it has its purpose, but its purpose is a little broader than we had originally planned it to be. Not just for procreation, it is for enjoyment too, and that's okay. But the thing is, what has happened in recent years? It has gone completely out of shape, hasn't it? Now, we try to tell our children, wait, you know, there's a time for that. when you get married, you can have sex and do these different things and what have you like that. And that's what we say because we come from an old philosophy, which is good or bad or indifferent. But the thing is, where are your values? You see, you have values more deeply set within you than you know. In Nigeria, they have bumper stickers of a boy and a girl sitting back to back, and it says, "True love can wait." And that's quite lovely. But the thing is, again, we're not promoting anything one way or another. I'm saying, what's your attitude about it? If you have an attitude that this is in perfect divine order, it is. But if you have an attitude that that's not perfect divine order, and you do that, then you're going to suffer the consequences. Because the consequences are not because drinking is bad or good, but what? Our attitude about it. Now you say, is that all it is? Well, that's what Jesus said. It is done unto you according to your belief. It's simple. It's done unto you according to your belief. Now, he was one of the greatest psychologists and philosophers and everything that we could ever imagine. And we don't listen even yet. We don't listen to our doctors who say we shouldn't do this because they go out and drink, you know. We say, if it's bad for us, it sure should be bad for you too, right? But they go and enjoy. We are not living our life for anybody else. You are not the doctor, and the doctor is not you. You are you. You are your thought. Now, what is your thought about yourself? Do you like yourself? Do you give yourself the energy massage? And do you go over your body gently once or twice a day and just completely massage yourself so that you're absolutely perfect? Do you do that? Am I still on? Yeah, there I am.
Yeah, no.
Do we do that? Now, we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful. We are not, and I'll write this like Moses on a tablet of stone. We are not our brother's keeper. We do not tell our brother what to do. We tell us what to do. And if we say of ourselves, I am perfect, I am beautiful, I like me, I am divine, then we see everyone in our world exactly like we see ourselves. Now, if you look out, excuse me for saying this, but if you look out and you see a world out there that's pretty rough, that's you. That's you. If you look out there and you see war, that's you. That's you. You know the song, "Now there is peace on earth, for it has begun with me. Now there is peace on earth, a peace that was meant to be." Now, that's the way I have redesigned the song. The song used to be this way. Let there be peace on earth. You see, let someone else bring peace on earth. Let someone else manifest it. Let someone else. And it is us that create the peace on earth. It is us that create all the goodness that takes place on earth. It's us that create our body healthy and whole. It's us that create ourselves rich. It's us that create ourselves surrounded by friends and beautiful circumstances. It's us. Nobody else. Nobody else. So, if any of you have in your world any unhappy situations, immediately stop and call them good. And very good. And whatever negative situation was there will instantly be a positive situation. You're driving your car and all of a sudden there's a tree right in front of you. Ah! You lose your cool. But rather than that, you say, all is in divine order, and mean it. And you just drive by the tree. You don't have to hit the tree. You think you're going to hit the tree because it seems obvious by the circumstances that you're going to hit the tree. You're not going to hit the tree unless you really want to hit the tree. Now, if you put in your mind, all is in divine order. You think of the war in XYZ, and then you say, isn't that a terrible war? You say, no. You hear of the war, and you say, all is in divine order. And you can't clean up a war that way, that easy. Oh, yes, you can. Do you know what some nations did during their wartime? They had a hiatus during Christmas. They had stopped the war on Christmas Eve. You've heard of that, I'm sure. They stopped the war on Christmas Eve. Now, what if they were Muslims? No. And what if there were other religious groups who are not necessarily believing in the Christian philosophy? But they stopped the war on Christmas Eve. Who did that? The astronauts were in outer space. And their spacecraft wasn't coming back like it should. Remember that? The science of the NASA couldn't make contact with the spacecraft. And it was lost in space. They could not redirect it to come back and land at its place on Earth. And so one radio announcer said, okay, let's pray that the spacecraft comes back safely to its natural landing spot. And this went around the world. Everybody picked it up. It was a lovely experience, but it didn't need to. One was enough. And the spacecraft landed perfectly. It's a record. But the spacecraft landed perfectly. Now, how can that happen? Because our thoughts are things. And every thought we think bears its own fruit. And if we are very careful of every thought we think, if we're very careful of every word we speak, of every action we take, we will have results that are utterly fantastic. Now, are you ready for such a thing? Are you ready for such an experience? If you are, clean up your act. Clean up your act. You say, I use Oliver here all the time. He's getting used to me using him. Oliver, you're a naughty boy. You're a naughty boy. You're a naughty boy. And Oliver says, Dad, you know, what did I do wrong? And I said, well, you didn't clean your room. Well, Dad, will you show me how you'd like to have me do it? Sure, you know. You're a little frustrated because you didn't expect that answer. And so then he takes you in his room and you show him how you'd like to have him do it. He says, Dad, I've been wondering how to do this and I didn't know how to ask you without asking like a little sissy boy, you know. Now, thank you, Dad. And so then he puts his clothes away properly. He puts his toys away properly. He cleans his room properly. Now, what happened? He merely put the cause in motion. We all put the cause in motion, and we can have that cause be a real experience for us if we want. Now, do you want that? Do you want that cause? That cause is very demanding of you. Now, what I consider my greatest value, I see in my world. I see peace on earth. Do you see peace on earth? Do you see peace in your world? I demonstrate what I consider my values of how I look at life. Okay. Every single moment, I am saying to myself, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. Every single moment of my life, I say, I like me. Every single moment, I say, I like me. I say, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. All is working out beautifully. All is working out wonderfully. I am so happy. I am so joyous. I am so peaceful. And then I go to my daughter and I say, sweetheart? Yes, I do. I say, sweetheart, Millicent? I say, you are so sweet. You are so wonderful. You make me so happy. Every time I say the word Millicent, I think, oh my goodness, I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed to have a daughter like you. And you look at me and you say, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. You haven't given me all the things I've asked for, and you know, you're just putting me on. Millicent, I love you. Millicent, you're beautiful. Millicent, you're wonderful. And I just keep going. I just keep going. I just keep going. I just keep telling her how wonderful she is. And pretty soon, she no longer thinks that I don't think she's wonderful. She thinks I think she's wonderful. And she begins to act wonderful. And she begins to act like a very fantastic woman. And pretty soon, her belligerence and her attitude of being against me ceases to be. And all of a sudden, she says, hey, Dad, is there something you'd like me to do? I have nothing to do this afternoon. Would you like me to help you or something? Did you ever say that to your dad? Did you ever say, hey, Dad, I have nothing to do this afternoon. Would you like me to do something? You see, if you say, Millicent, you're so wonderful, you're so sweet, you're so... And you're not really trying to get something out of her, except her best. Then she will shine forth with her best. Okay, now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. You look at all the countries on the world, and now there's peace on it. You see, this 9/11 thing that we made all out of shape, we made it into a big jail cell for ourselves. We allowed this couple of incidences, this couple of people who didn't have good sense to mess up. Okay, they needed to be put in place. All we had to do was to go to the governments of the people who were being associated with the 9/11 people and have diplomatic talks with them. You say, well, you can't have diplomatic... That's right, you can't have diplomatic talks with them if you say you can't have diplomatic talks with them. And that's what we say. We say we can't have it, so you can't have it. And yet, you take the great UNO diplomats. They go out and they talk with people. You don't know all the magic that they're doing, keeping the world in its balance of peace and harmony and goodness. We don't know that because we're not in their shoes. But they are bringing peace and balance and joy and love to the world because of one thing. That's their job. That's their job. Millicent, what is a father's job? To be a loving parent, right? Okay. If a father is not going to be a loving parent, he's not being a loving father, is he? Okay. This is what we want to do. We want to play our role very well. Now, what is your role? Are you a peacemaker? Are you the person who sets all things in divine order? Are you the person who determines what you're going to do in this life and how you're going to handle it? It's up to you. Absolutely up to you. If you don't know your role, you're in trouble. That's why I say, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. That's a good role. And when I like me, then all the world likes me? No, I like all the world. And there is nothing in the world not to like. What's that show we saw? Prince and Princess from some, it was a comedy, that is a cartoon comedy. And she comes out of the...
Enchanted.
If any of you have seen Enchanted, lovely little show. And so the prince is asked by his aide, have you ever thought that someone wouldn't like you? Have you ever thought that someone wouldn't like you? Because the aide was going through that situation. And the prince said to the aide, what is there not to like? What is there not to like about me? What is there not to like about me? Can you say that? What is there not to like about you? Are you the ideal mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, cousin, man, woman? I had a woman who was going through some difficulties with her husband, and she wanted to straighten it out.
And she says, Dr. Barley, what do I do? And I said, well, it's simple. I said, very simple. You got to figure out who you are. And she says, I know who I am. I'm a woman. I said, okay. You're a woman. Are you a wife? Yeah. Are you a mother? Yeah. Are you an ideal woman? Yeah. Are you ideal? Are you the ideal being? Neither mother nor father, nor sister nor brother, or aunt nor uncle, or whomever, but are you the ideal being? And if you are the ideal being, you will only associate with other ideal beings. Now, I'm the ideal father. Well, I can't have an ideal mother in my world because I would look at her as an ideal father. But if I look at the woman in my world or another person in my world as an ideal being, then we can have a perfect relationship. But if I look at them as the ideal husband or the ideal wife or the ideal, you don't cover it all. Are you going to cover, are you the ideal father? Are you the ideal husband? Are you the ideal man? Are you the ideal? You see, we don't need to have all these details. Are you the ideal being? If you are the ideal being, then you encompass all. Then, as the creator, you are the ideal creator. Now, are you creating ideal people in your world? Yes. Where do you start? With yourself. You start by creating yourself as the ideal person, ideal being. And as you create yourself as the ideal being, then wonderful things happen to you. And that's exactly what you want it to be, don't you? You want it always to be wonderful things happening. You're going to stay in place now. Isn't that wonderful? Is that what you want to be? Do you want to be the ideal being? Or do you want to be something else? Do you want to be so mixed up with little details? I am independently wealthy. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I surround this car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, all its paths are pleasantness. The way is open before me. What is our table blessing, Ellen?
This food is healthy for my body and filled with love.
This food is healthy for my body and filled with love. Now, if you don't say that before you eat your meal, you're not blessing your food. You know, and we don't want to say that, do we? Do we want to have to always say before we eat that this food is healthy for my body and filled with love? Do we want to say that? No, we don't want to say that. We want to just say what? I am the ideal being. I am the ideal being. I am the ideal being. Now, if you make that as a chant or a call or a mantra or something for yourself, great things will happen in your life. Great things. But it's up to you to be consistent with that. Because if 1 minute you watch television and you see something sad and you say, oh dear, then you have empowered that to be an oh dear thing. And you, the ideal, have seen something unideal in your mind and therefore you are unideal. Jesus the Christ had people come to him and say, Jesus, heal me. And his answer to them was, what wouldst thou of me? What do you want from me? I am the Christ. I can only see my Christ self. I can only see perfection. Now, let's just take that a little area further in a silly way. Can you imagine you, any of you or us, going to God in heaven, you know, and saying, oh God, help me for this. Oh God, please help me. And God would say to us, if God were Jesus the Christ or something, he would say, what wouldst thou of me? Everything you're doing is perfectly what you want to do. Now, if you want to not hit the tree, turn away from it. If you want to live a perfect life, then start having perfect thoughts about yourself. If you want to be the ideal that you are, and not the contrary to ideal that you are, which is you can be that too, but it's an illusion, and it's not going to be real, but you're going to think it's real. Now, do you want to be that? If you want to be that, then go play that game. You see, it's a very tough situation. It's a tough situation. Do you really want to be who you are? Or is that just something you're saying because you think it's nice to say? Do you really want to be who you are? Or is it something that you say just because it's nice to say? And this is what we do oftentimes. Who is it that you really are? I am good. Lucille, say that. I am good. That's not hard, is it?
No. I'm lovable.
Hmm?
I'm lovable.
See, right away she wants to ad lib. She's just like Reverend Slater, she wants to ad lib. She read us her thesis there, and she ad libbed 3/4 of it and added it to it, and so we had 2 theses in 1 given to us. And we should really consider that we're honored. We should really consider we're honored whenever we are given great wisdom. Now, you see, I said to you, say, I like me.
I like me.
And right away you wanted to ad lib. Now, you see, the very fact that you say you want to ad lib means that you're not sure of yourself. If you don't think that I like me is one of the most magnificent, wonderful statements that you could ever make in the entire world, what did God say, according to the Bible, when he finished creating the earth?
And it was good and very good.
It was good and very good. Now, did he say, it was damn good, it was super good, it was super califragilisticexpialidocious? He didn't say that. He said it was good and very good. Now, you see, we want to get rid of the adverbs and adjectives and stuff like that, that are always tearing down. I always am a good person. I just think this way. I only know the truth, you know. I know the truth. I am this way. I like me. See? Now, it's not you. You're the practitioner. For all the years that you've been a practitioner, you are a magic lady. And all of us are magic beings because we are all practitioners. Every one of you was born to be divine. That's a lie. Every one of you was born and is divine. And now, every one of you was born and at your birth, you were ordained to be ideal. Every one of you was born to be ideal at birth, and you are ideal. Every one of you is born to be the expression of all that is good and beautiful and whole and perfect right now. I have a lot of people who talk to me and they say, you know, I think what I'd like to do, I would like to go someplace where I can learn miracles. I'd like to learn how to walk on water, you know, like Jesus did. I'd like to learn how to raise the sick and raise the dead. I would like to go and manifest things. I would like to take the Babuda, like the
Sai Baba
does, and makes jewelry out of it and gives it to his visitors. I would like to do all those things. My loves, you're doing it every moment of your life. Every moment of your life. You know, you'd like to make wine out of water like Jesus did. And you say, well, that'd be great. Well, anyone can do it. Just take the grapes, put them in the barrel and ferment them, you get the wine. Now, Jesus did it like this. Now, let me ask you, do you think that Jesus was a master of time? Do you think it was timeless in Jesus' mind, Jesus' world? I think so. Do you think it was spaceless in Jesus' world? Do you think that all things that happened in biblical times could easily happen right now and are? Yes. Do we have the ability to open our eyes and see it? Yes, we do. Do you want to see it? Do you want to know it? Do you want to experience it? Do you want to have this wholeness? Okay, now. Dr. Oliver, give me $100 and I will teach you how to walk on fire. And he says, okay. So he gives me $100 and I teach him how to walk on fire. And I have maybe about 50 other guys and women that I'm teaching how to walk on fire. That's a nice amount of money, isn't it? Yeah. And so I teach them in about 2 or 3 hours how to walk on fire. And then I have them walk on the fire. And they walk across the fire and they say, wow, this is great. But I lied to them. I lied to them. Can anyone tell me why I lied to them? Did they walk on fire? Do you know the story? Did they walk on fire, anybody?
No.
That was the story.
What's that? Please say it.
No, they didn't.
Oh.
Yeah, you know it. I know that.
You got to tell us the story. We don't know.
Oh, Joey, that's like pulling leg. Okay. What he did, the teacher, what I did, as a teacher, I changed the psychology of the situation from walking on fire to walking on cool, wet moss. And I so manipulated the people's mind to believing that this is cool, wet moss that they're walking on, that they walk on the cool, wet moss, and they do that. They absolutely do that. They walk on cool. And I have a lot of old ladies, young ladies, and men, and children, and people who are walking on that fire, and it is amazing. It's beautiful. They change their mind about the coals down here, and they called it cool, wet moss, and they walked on. Now, are you willing? Are you willing to go to miracle school? You see, are you willing to go to miracle school and learn how to walk on fire? Are you learning to create wine? Are you learning to go and raise the dead? And what did Jesus say about the dead? They only sleep. If he thought they were dead, he could never have raised them. He didn't believe they were dead. And they weren't dead. Now, it's not that he had such a powerful consciousness. It's just that he knew the truth. Now, when we know the truth, did you walk on fire?
No.
What did you walk on? Cool, wet moss. You walked on cool, wet moss. You see, the thing is, you tell people they walk on fire, but they really walk on cool, wet moss. We change the psychology, we change the philosophy, we change the attitudes we have about these things, and when we change these attitudes, what happens? The situation changes. Just as simple as that. When a child says, I don't know how to swim, and then you say, yeah, let's go play in the water with this water wing here and just have fun. And we'll splash around here and we'll do this here. And, hey, come on now, you know. Hey, I don't know how to ride a bike. Come on, just sit on the seat. I'll hold it while you're pulling around. Now, you just pump the pedals. I'll hold it. I'm right here holding on to you. And then next thing you know, he's off riding a bike. You see, all of these things, until you let go and let it happen to you, you don't have the experience. And once you have the experience, then you have everything. Then you have the fulfillment of every dream you could ever want. Now, are you ready for that? Well, I think you are. I am easy, and so is my life and my world. Now, why am I easy, and why is my life and my world easy? For one simple reason. Because I always look to the truth, and I always look to the joyful experience. For me, all of life is happy. For me, all of life is a wonderful, joyous experience. I don't like walking into people's homes and telling them that some of their homes, some of their rooms have bad vibrations because of one thing or another, or that the room has good vibrations, or that they're doing this. I was in Italy, and this one woman, we had a seminar, and she was at the seminar and asked me to come to her home afterwards. And I went there, and Ellen was along. And she says, my son can't sleep. He is in his room, and he can't sleep, and he just has nightmares and dreams, and everything is terrible, 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 terrible. She says, Dr. Barrett, would you please look at his room? And I said, sure, I'll look at his room. So I went in to look at his room. And when I looked at his room, what did I find out? What did I find out in his room? His mother was an artist. And his mother had painted paintings. She had painted paintings with dark-colored paintings. And the dark-colored paintings that she had painted in were so difficult, so black, that colors, and was really irritated by the dark paintings. And the dark paintings made him feel very terrible. But she didn't know that. And I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I just said, okay. Now, let's just take a few things out of the room. Let's just take this painting out of the room. Take this. I didn't want to give her a clue as to what I was doing, because then she'd object.
Well, I brought your room, but that's my painting. I did that for my son.
No, we'll just take it out. And so she took out the painting, and she took out the other things. And then she said, and then her son went to bed and slept. And for the next couple of days, everything was perfect. But then she put the picture back in his room, because she didn't realize what it was that had been the problem. And immediately he started having the bad dreams again, because the picture that she painted was so stark and so tragic. Now, we do that in our life. We have things, and I talk to people. I go into people's houses and I say, just do this here and do that, and I don't usually give any reasons for it. And when I do that and they do it, then magic happens for them. But when they argue with me, and when they say, well, this is what I am, and then, like Lorraine, rather, Reverend Slater, well, no, Lorraine, Reverend Slater wouldn't say this. Lorraine said to me, well, Dr. Barley, why do you have St. Francis of Assisi out in front of your monastery? And, does it matter? You see, the moment you start trying to figure out why things are done, then the benefit of them being done is no longer there. The benefit is no longer there. Once, if you ask this Japanese person who knows putting things in certain directions, you know what I mean, and in their architecture, so that they're east and west and north and south, and that the houses are facing the right directions and stuff. And everybody who hires this group of architects in Japan, as soon as they build their houses and direct them the way the architect said, their houses are peace, their houses are power, because the architect says that's what happens when we build it and do it that direction. Now, what about all the people who have peaceful and happy homes who aren't building them in that direction? You see, this is all part of consciousness, all part of the mind. And if we start knowing all of the reasons why these things are, then we'll fight them. And the more that we fight them, the more that we keep ourselves from having that glorious experience of having these things be meaningful and powerful to us. Now, let go and let the divine. Let go and let God. You say, Dad, will you help me? And Father comes along and he says, oh, sure. What are you working on? Oh, okay. Yeah, this is how I would do it. Yeah, okay. Beautiful. But Dad, the teacher says we had to do this, we had to do this. Well, son, this is how I would do it. Now, here is why I would do it that way and how it works. Oh, that makes sense. But why would the teacher say it was different? Son, you go back and you tell the teacher what we have talked about, if you believe it, and see what the teacher has to say. And he goes back and he talks to his teacher, and he tells the teacher, and the teacher says, oh, that's the advanced way of looking at it. You are brilliant. You are wonderful. I wasn't ready to give you that advanced technique just yet, but man, how did you figure that out? You're brilliant. And then you don't say, my dad showed me. You just say, I worked at it. Or you can say, my dad showed me. But in any event, if we ever fight the techniques that are given to us as they're given to us, if you don't believe you're going to walk on cool, wet moss, and you think that's going to be coals of fire down underneath your feet, you'll burn your feet. But you know, people who walk on the cool, wet moss, if the thermometer is held there, or as they have done, they have taken a chicken and moved it along the fire. By the time they got to the other end, it was cooked. And you had your pants, and you pulled up your pants, and the heat should have scorched your trousers, and it didn't. This is such a magical thing, such an interesting thing, how the mind works. You all know about Psychology 1, where you tell a person you're going to put a hot knife on their hand, and then you put a cold knife on their hand, and the cold knife burns their hand. I mean, so utterly stupid, you know? And you think it's a hot knife, and it is not. It's a cold knife, and it burns your hand. Well, this is how these things work sometimes, and they're really quite amazing. And I think it's very important for us to follow the principles and follow the directions and follow the things that we like to do. Before we adjourn this evening, I think that Reverend Slater said a few of you might have some questions you'd like to discuss, and I'm happy to field them with you if you'd like to ask them at this time. Anyone with questions? You're so brilliant, you got all the answers already. And that's great. That's really great. All right. Then we have 2 minutes left before we should close down. So let us all sit quietly and let's go into a state of introspection. A state of meditation, a state of relaxation. Close your eyes. Let your feet rest flat on the floor. Let your hands be resting in your lap. And say to yourself, to yourself, I am peace. 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 Now, as you say, I am peace to yourself, realize that this is God speaking to you, in you, about you. God in you is telling you, you are peace. God in you is telling you that the world in which you live is peace now and always. God in you is the only God you will ever know. God is universal in everyone. God created all things. God created all things and called all things good and very good. And that means that you and I are good and very good. But all things that God created itself is in all that it creates. Everything that is God. Every illusion is God, and every reality is God. All is God. I have the privilege of calling forth in my life experience the illusions of what I call good, happy, peaceful, joyful, whole, in every loving way. And I have that privilege of doing that right now. I say to myself, I am a good person. I like me. I like everybody in my world. I think of my brother and I say, what a wonderful boy. I think of my sisters and I say, what a wonderful sister. I think of my parents and I say, wow, was I blessed by the parents I created having me in this world. I think of the infinite number of dimensions on which I live as God. I think of myself on the infinite number of dimensions that I express myself. Some of these dimensions I live currently in my life. Some of them I live in my dreams. Some of them I don't remember at all. But all of them I am now. I am divine. I am the ideal being. I am ideal being now. I am God. God I am. I am God. God I am. I am God. God I am. All of my creation is God. Whether I think of myself as the infinite creative cause or the present universal cause or the cause and effect that dwell in this relative world, at all times I am God expressing. And I am good and I am loving. And I am peaceful. And I am good, I am loving, and I am peaceful. Each of you are 100% God right now. Each of you are expressing the allness that God is right now. Each of you is revealing to yourself and your world in every beautiful way what you understand yourself as God to be. I know that. I am that. And that is who I am, and that is who I always will be. For I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am that I am. I am happy. I am healthy. I am surrounded by delightful, charming, wonderful beings. All of my world is good and very good. I am ideal being now. I am ideal being now. I am ideal being now. Thank you for joining with me this evening. I see the organization here, the divine circle of illumination, the divine circle of the Illuminati, the divine circle of the divine, fulfilling all the dreams and goals that each of you have for it. For now, each of you are christened, ordained members, ordained beings of the Illuminati, the illumined ones, the revealed ones, the divine ones, the universal one now. And what a great world that is. And so it is. I love you. I love you. I love you.